Before you start listening to this podcast, we've got a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, which will give you full access to everything on our website, and we'll also throw in a free £20 Amazon voucher. Just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Thank you for joining us this evening for the Spectator's panel debate. We're going to be asking, is it time to offer amnesty to Britain's illegal immigrants? While I remember, there is a hashtag if you want to get involved in the social conversation on social media. It is #SpecImmigration. And we also have the Spectator Events Twitter account. Now, when it comes to the theme of this debate, we had a leading article in a recent issue of The Spectator which argued, there is an unspoken truth about British life. We have two classes of citizen. The first are those born or formally settled here, who have all the rights and protections of the law. Then there are perhaps a million others who may have lived here with their families for years, but without the proper documents. They can be our neighbours, work in our shops, contribute to our economy. Yet they do not have the same basic protections and are far more vulnerable to exploitation. These are the so-called illegal immigrants, and it's past time to offer them amnesty. When it comes to addressing how many of these immigrants there are, the Pew Research Centre estimates that there are between 800,000 to 1.2 million illegal immigrants in the UK. Around 250,000 of that number are thought to have been here for 10 years or longer. And when we are talking about this amnesty for illegal immigrants, I think the number vaguely everyone had in mind was a 10-year amnesty. Boris Johnson was once quite keen on the idea. He first talked about having an amnesty when he was London mayor. It came up again during his leadership and briefly when he was prime minister. But he's gone rather quiet on the issue of late. But happily, the panel tonight have not. So we're going to hear all their views. Now, I'm going to introduce the panel in a second, but just to get a sense of where the room is on this, I was wondering, when it comes to the motion, it's time to offer amnesty to Britain's illegal immigrants, who agrees with that, if you could raise your hand? Okay, and who disagrees? Okay, so at the moment we have more in favour of agreeing. I would say about two-thirds.
God bless London, eh?
Fraser thought he was going to have a difficult night tonight, but...
You must be Spectator readers, God.
Yeah. It's actually...
Very enlightened bunch you'll find.
It's actually looking worse for Al. But now I will just introduce the panel. So we have Fraser Nelson, editor of The Spectator, Telegraph columnist. He is in favour of a route to amnesty for 10 years or more. Previously, he said that if Johnson won a majority in the election, which, spoiler, he did, he should celebrate by offering these immigrants an earned amnesty. Now we have Kate Andrews, The Spectator's recently appointed economics correspondent. Kate has said that as well as a moral argument for an amnesty, there is potentially an economic one. Immigration is necessary for tax revenue. And then on the side, we're either arguing against or at least voicing some reservations in the case of David Goodhart. We have David Goodhart, head of demography, immigration and integration at Policy Exchange. Goodhart has expressed some support for a 10-year amnesty. He's also talked about the need for ID cards to try and deter illegal immigration going forward. And then I think our voice of dissent, who is going to bring a different perspective, is Alp Mamet, chairman of Migration Watch UK. In response to one of Fraser's articles on the issue, Mamet said, a mass amnesty for illegal immigrants would bring more pouring in. Now, to begin the debate, I'm going to ask each of the panel to give us a very short 2 to 4 minutes, we're thinking, presentation of where they sit, and then we are going to have some questions and try and quite quickly open it up to the audience. So, Fraser, do you want to kick us off?
I'd love to. Well, first of all, thank you for coming this evening. We at The Spectator do lots of debates and issues we know are wildly popular. This isn't one of them. This is perhaps the most unpopular cause in politics. And that's why I think it's so important that we discuss it tonight, that we campaign for it in the magazine, because the people that we're talking about here, as Katie says, up to 1.2 million of them, that is an incredible number. We've got American levels of immigration without really an American level of debate. the Americans are good at least acknowledging the presence of the undocumented migrants. When we hear the phrase, we think it's an American problem. But unbeknownst, we don't like to think about the fact that there are so many living amongst us, as colleagues, as neighbours, as countrymen. And this, so I think it's past time that we did discuss this, that we did stop turning the blind eye. Now, right now, there are, you know, by definition, it is difficult to work out exactly how many illegal immigrants there are in a country, but there are estimates. The estimate for London is about 400,000. So that means that of the 100 or so of you in this room, about 3 of you would be undocumented migrants. That would mean that you would, be, of course, be, in theory, walking around the same streets as the rest of us, but without proper legal protection, without belonging to the economic system that would allow you to develop your life properly, without your children. Sure, they might get to school, schools don't do checks, but then when they go to university, the children of undocumented migrants find, often to their amazement, that they're not considered British and can't get the passage to university. We are talking nationally 1.2 million, way too many to be regarded as a kind of criminal underclass. Well, half of them will be women, many of them will have families, there'll be 120,000 of them, roughly speaking, will be children. So what should we do with these people who constitute our country within a country? Now, you might argue that their children's parents should never have come here, that they should have entered legally. I'm sure Al will be telling us later on, but they ought to have obeyed the rules, that the British like their fair play, and these legal migrants have violated that fair play. But that's not quite the way I see it. I think the desire to come to a country to better the chances of your family is one of the most powerful forces in human nature. It's the reason that my ancestors, not so many generations ago, were crossing to Kate's country, America, in boats, knowing there is about a 1 in 10 chance of survival. People do crazy things in pursuit of a better life. It's a force which is so strong that it effectively created the United States of America. These are not bad people. In many ways, they are the most ambitious people amongst us. And again, I am not saying let's completely ignore the law, let's grant complete citizenship tomorrow to every single illegal migrant. I'm talking about a route to citizenship, a common sense compromise here, an earned amnesty. If you've been here, if you basically pose no conceivable threat to this country, if you haven't been running against the law, if you haven't been in prison, if you haven't broken the law, then you ought to be given a route to citizenship. 10 years is the figure I'm going for, though I'm open to persuasion on whether it should be a bit more or a bit less. Now, if you disagree with that, then you are effectively saying these people should be consigned to their shadowy existence where they do not have the basic legal protection, where they're wide open to exploitation of employers, quite many of whom in this city and beyond thrive on the ability to employ illegal migrants who they know are never going to get running to the police if they're badly treated. That isn't something that we can continue, I would argue, with good conscience, just to ignore. And it's pretty difficult to say that we're content for things to be as they are. So this is why I think it's so important. And we're about to have a one-off adjustment in our migration system. We're about to leave the European Union. Priti Patel is about to come up with a new regime that will make it harder to come to this country. That will be the upshot. Perfect opportunity to say at the same time, it is now time to deal fairly with those who've been living amongst us with roots settled in this country and give them the path to citizenship, which I think they by now richly deserve. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, it is a genuine pleasure as a specky addict who's been to these debates before. I really feel rather excited. Let's be clear. An amnesty would be ineffective, expensive and unpopular. It would be a grave insult to both legal migrants who have done it properly, they've been in the queue, they've gone through the system. And what about law-abiding citizens, us? Let's be clear, people who come here illegally, whatever the means, whether they come in perfectly properly, choose to stay here having obtained admission at the border, being given permission to stay here legally, extended perhaps, but then at some point they have knowingly chosen to stay here when they have run out of permission to be here. They are here illegally. It's not a case of being undocumented, not having the right documents. They are here illegally. There are those who come in the backs of lorries, who come in cars, in boots. Clandestine entry, that is a relatively small part. But they too add to the numbers. We've heard around 1 million people here who are here illegally. Possibly more. 1.2 million, 1.5 million. That is the size of Birmingham, for goodness sake. We cannot simply turn a blind eye to having such people here in those sort of numbers. There's also the failed asylum seekers, those who have sought to stay here by claiming asylum, have been denied asylum. They've gone through the whole judicial process and have been told, no, you don't qualify, they don't leave. Taking all these together, there are something like 70,000, a conservative estimate, 70,000 additional people being added to the illegal population in this country every year. An amnesty? To what end? An amnesty again next year by those who didn't quite make it? No more illegal immigrants here? I don't think so. The additional resources that will be needed in order to deal administratively with these people will be massive. Scarce resources that, frankly, could be deployed elsewhere to help the system work better than it does at the moment. Other experience of amnesties has been in Italy, in Spain, in France. All of them have tried it. Umpteen amnesties. By the time they've finished dealing with one lot of applicants, suddenly you find that the numbers have increased, doubled in 10 years, both in Spain and in Italy. Processing them will be a gargantuan effort and nigh on impossible, frankly, for those who have been here for 10 years or more to prove it. An administrative nightmare inviting industrial-scale abuse. The interior ministers of Spain, Italy and France, they've all said no more amnesties based on the experiences that they've had. In Germany in 2005, the German interior minister said wide-ranging campaigns to legalise illegal immigrants, such as in Spain, mean more illegal immigrants being drawn to Europe. What is clear is that amnesties not only don't work, they are hugely costly. And I know that Kate is going to tell us how we will add to the coffers by giving an amnesty to those who are here illegally at the moment. Let me finish with one last point, penultimate last point, if I may. 77% of people in this country, adults, the public, support tougher action to deal with illegal immigration. 77%. An amnesty, frankly, would be going in the opposite direction, not what they want. OK, yes, we can ignore what people say. We can ignore what people beyond London say. You know, who cares? Well, all I would say is Labour tried that one. It didn't work. Finally, and this really is finally, let me quote an associate editor of The Spectator, Douglas Murray, the great Douglas Murray. He wrote recently, bad things are rarely done by people who think they are doing bad things. They are almost everywhere done by people who imagine that they are acting for the common good. Precisely, Douglas. Thank you.
Kate.
Well, I imagine Douglas was describing the Home Office when he came up with that quote. My baseline is that people should not be abused or exploited under any circumstances. That is wrong. That's the baseline that I operate from, and everything that I want to talk about tonight stems from that, because that is what the current system in which illegal migrants who live and work and survive in the UK experience. By not having legal rights, by not having access to anything really that protects us on a day-to-day basis, these people are vulnerable to abuse and exploitation. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that the current situation of doing nothing is going to work on either side. That's just, we have to rule that out. Do nothing does not work, because we cannot allow for these people to live in a world where they're abused and exploited. So you could go the other way. You could go towards cracking down on these illegal migrants here in the UK. You could bring in a hostile environment, or one more hostile than what Theresa May and the Home Office and then as Prime Minister brought in. But that didn't work. That didn't send people home. The go-home vans did not work. She made it extremely difficult for anybody to legally rent an apartment in the UK without having their status confirmed, and that still didn't work. They didn't go home. So you could go another step further, and you could look to countries like Hungary that are rounding people up and actually forcing them to stay in one place until they can deport them. We can go down that pathway, but frankly, I'm not convinced at all that it would A, work, B, deter, or C, stop the abuse and the exploitation. So for me, the common sense, reasonable way to move away from a bad system is to look towards amnesty. And ELP talks about amnesties in Spain and across Europe, and they're very different. In Spain, it was offered basically to all illegal migrants there who could prove that they might be able to work. We're not talking about being granted citizenship overnight, as Fraser said. We're talking about a long, hard, tough pathway to get to a place where you could rise up out of that abuse and exploitation. And if we look to the United States, there's a much more positive story to tell. When Ronald Reagan, in 1986, brought an amnesty for over 10 million illegal migrants, attempts to get to the UK, sorry, to the US, through the back door actually subsided. And to this day, on the left and the right, it's thought to be one of the best immigration policies we've had in modern times, because it went hand in hand with other kinds of immigration reform. So we have a very unique opportunity with these new immigration plans to bring in a tighter system that is looking at how people come to the UK in the future, while also showing compassion to those who have been here for so long, laid down roots, and have massively contributed to British society, whether that's through the military, whether that's through setting up a family, having kids, whether that's through work, whether that's through paying into the system and not taking anything out, which tends to happen with illegal migrants. These are people who I think really deserve to stay. And if we look at the demographics, over 60% of those who are here illegally are under the age of 35. These are people who want to work, people who are going to contribute, people who might help us sort out those pension and healthcare promises that we've made that we don't know how to pay for yet. And I have to say, through my own personal experience as somebody who is an immigrant to the UK, I don't think that this is unfair or unjust. I don't see it as people jumping the queue. The queue is a myth. The queue is an absolute myth. It is so difficult to immigrate here if you're from outside of the European Union during free movement. It is even harder to naturalize or become a citizen. It takes years and years of hard work, and the system is designed to kick you out at every step, so you have to go back to square one. People have to fight in order to naturalize here. And I'm one of the most privileged migrants you'll find. I'm from the United States, I'm educated, I went to university in Scotland, and I've had to fight to have my status here. And when I think about the struggles I've had, it is so much harder for those who didn't come from such a privileged place to make a good life for themselves. And I'm sympathetic to that. They're not jumping the queue. There aren't millions of people lining up to get citizenship tomorrow who are being kicked out. It's really hard for any of us to do it. So to grant these people amnesty and a pathway to citizenship, like I have a pathway, a tough pathway to citizenship, I think is the fairest thing to do. And the last thing I note is that there's no longer going to be a pathway for low-skilled migrants to come to the UK to work. It's only going to be through loopholes and family connections. So this is the moment to show that we still care about those at the bottom who are doing everything they can to rise up. This is the moment because they're here. They're not new numbers going to the UK, coming to the UK. They're not a million new people who need homes or need access to the NHS. They're here. They've been here for a long time. And I think they have the right to stay. David.
Okay, well, I mean, Kate has been sort of blurring the line between legal and illegal immigration. Fraser talked about the debate in America and how impressive the debate about illegal immigration has been, and that is true. But what Fraser forgets is that they only had a debate about illegal immigration until Trump won the election in 2016. At the end, they never talked about legal immigration at all. But I think you're right. I mean, I think Fraser is right that this is going to become a much bigger issue in this country, partly because we are now going to control our borders after Brexit happens. So I think, as it were, once that problem is sort of solved to some extent, we will start to looking for new problems. And one of the new problems that people will alight upon is the fact that we do have 1 million, 1.2 million people here illegally. But, I mean, it is pretty clear that the debate is a kind of false opposition. I mean, none of the people on the other side are arguing for anything like the kind of amnesty that happened in the US in 86 or most of the amnesties that have happened in the EU in the last few years. This is not a black and white issue. I think if you were arguing for a general amnesty, then obviously it's crazy. I mean, and fortunately you're sensible enough not to argue for a general amnesty. I mean, but even a kind of extensive amnesty would be a complete kick in the teeth for all of the people who have just voted for Brexit, all of the people who have just voted for the Conservative Party, particularly in the Red Wall. I think you do kind of underestimate, you know, what a cancer it is in the inner city. I mean, it does undermine decent behaviour. It undermines good employers because bad employers, you know, hire people for £2 an hour and so on. And it is, any kind of sort of publicly declared amnesty would be a massive pull factor. It would be a huge marketing tool for the human traffickers. And the truth is, it hasn't worked. The 86 US amnesty was not a success. And we've had massive waves of illegal immigration in America since 1986. But I agree, it is not stupid to consider reducing what one might call the limbo population in this country to the lowest possible level. It'll never disappear completely, but let's use it as one tool, one weapon in an armoury of different tools to try and reduce that population. I mean, there's the basic prevention tool, stopping people coming in illegally in the first place. Well, you know, we do a reasonable job on that on the technology side. Things have actually got a lot better in terms of stopping people coming in on lorries and so on in the last 5 or 10 years. We've invested a lot of money into that, and that kind of works. We need to be a lot tougher on the gaming of the legal system, the abuse of judicial review and so on. I mean, it's absolute legion. I mean, the kind of the legal NGO world behaves extremely badly in this area and doesn't allow the law to take its course as it should properly. And we should do a lot more of basically bribing people to leave. There are 100,000 people, 100,000 failed asylum seekers who are kind of on the books, who we pay for. We pay for their accommodation in many places, in many cases. They have to they report to, it's every month or every quarter. We should use that as an opportunity, and we should take money from the, you know, this great, great unused pot of money that DFID has, and give people 15 grand, 25 grand to go and start up small businesses in the countries they come from. As you say, these are often very dynamic, ambitious people. I mean, there is a potential moral hazard there, actually. I suppose people want to come to the country in order then to be paid to leave. But the other point is, the other reason this is not black and white is that regularisation already happens on quite an extensive scale. I mean, lots of immigration caseworkers are allowing people to regularise and get permanent residence. Every day there are dozens, if not hundreds, of cases. And between 2006 and 2011, there was a huge backlog. I mean, it was our own administrative fault. There was a huge backlog of people applying for asylum, and they were just, 250,000 of them were allowed to apply for permanent residence, and most of them did. So we already have a system for regularisation. Like I say, it should be one tool in a whole armoury. And I do think, I do agree, there are particular sort of subgroups of the illegal population that one could discreetly target, say, people with kids, people with families who have been here for more than 10 years. There's absolutely no way they're ever going to be deported. And it does actually make sense, I think, to have that kind of limited kind of regularisation. It works best in the national interest, not necessarily for politicians, it works best in the national interest if this is just done quietly and discreetly and it will get out, of course, in the longer run if we do fix on a group like that and allow them to regularise. But it's less of a marketing tool for the human traffickers, and I think that's important. Having said that, I do think that there might be a case for some kind of more semi-public kind of quid pro quo. Because, as Katie said at the beginning, I'm very keen on this idea. I mean, one of the things that would stop the Windrush cock-up, it would make illegal immigration far harder here. And per capita, illegal immigration is much lower in most other big European countries because they have national identity management, so citizen identity management system. So some kind of quid pro quo in which you say, yes, we're going to go for a limited regularisation. Perhaps people like that family group I talked about, or people who have been here for more than 15 years, which is actually Boris's latest proposal, was for people who have been here for more than 15 years. So it's not actually particularly radical, because you already get, you can already come out from behind the bushes after 20 years. It used to be 14 years. It moved up to 20 years in 2012. In fact, it used to be 10 years before it moved up to 14 years. So I think there is some case for us, and it is easier to do difficult things early on in the life of a government. So there may be some case for quid pro quo, but I would prefer it to go on being done discreetly. So Boris wouldn't get a great Boris bounce amongst Liberal Britain, but Farage wouldn't be able to say, I told you so. He was, he's really a London Liberal after all. But so discreet. And, I mean, unless we went for that quid pro quo, I'd want just, in a way, continuing what we're doing now, but a bit more so.
Thank you, David. Now I'm going to go back to the panel, but I just thought before we do that, and we are going to come to audience questions, so do get thinking of those. A majority of the room said that they were in favour of, offering an amnesty to Britain's illegal immigrants who had been here for 10 years. I was wondering, how many be in favour of offering that to those illegal immigrants who have been here for 5 years? Okay. 2 years. Okay, so it was tested. So we got one person for 2 years.
Yeah, two.
Two. Oh, two. Sorry, two for two. There we go. Okay, so that gives us a sense of where the mood is on that. James, thinking of my colleague James Forsyth, Fraser. Picking up on what David just said, The Spectator has run many articles while I've been there about the need to stop people smugglers, about how the fact people traffickers are coming here because there is the wrong messaging about what happens when you get to this country, and actually you need to encourage people to stay in the countries they are in. So do you accept that what you're proposing today, a 10-year amnesty, is just going to encourage the idea that if you come to the UK, you can stay, and therefore more people are going to want to come here?
No, I don't. I think it's two different things. I must admit, I'm not persuaded by Alp's idea that if you basically offer an amnesty for those who've been here for 10 years, this will lead to a huge surge in migrants. I mean, I remember when Nick Clegg, one of the very few sensible things he ever said, was in the 2010 debate, where he proposed an earned amnesty for illegal immigrants. And people like Alp said, oh, this is terrible. If you do this, the floodgates are going to open, they're all going to come. Since then, we've had immigration has gone up by something like 2 million more people have come to this country. Immigration happens whether or not you have a policy on an asylum for illegal citizens or not. This is not something I think would make a measurable difference to the number of immigrants coming into Britain. Now, of course, one of the, I think, the great scandals of our time, the new worldwide giant evil, is the new industry of people trafficking. And it sort of breaks your heart to see, to read these stories about people. It's not so much, of course, you're horrified to find out that people have been, you know, suffocated in the lorries trying to get into Britain. But then you think of the journey they had and everything which they gave up. Quite often, recently, educated people from Vietnam, they gave up everything to start at the very bottom of this country. Now, it's just kind of amazing to think that here we are, every day we take for granted what other people literally risk their lives to achieve. But they give their lives to the people smugglers because the people smugglers are able to say to them that we can basically offer you a scam and you can instantly get status. And then, or they can, the people smugglers can say to them that we're going to give you various employment. I don't think that would change by now. They're not coming here in order, alas, to stay 10 years and become citizens. They're coming in order to lead lives in the black market. Now, most of the room here is against giving an amnesty for those who've been less here than 5 years. And that's because we all know there's a big moral difference between saying to everybody, sure, you can stay. You want to give it a root. I don't think the idea of spending 5 years living a black market existence is particularly enticing. And I don't think it would make things much better. I don't think it would be act as a greater incentive for those who are already willing to offer just to tragically, the risks are tragically much to start at the bottom anyway.
Kate, what do you think of David's suggestion when it comes to this idea that actually were Boris Johnson going to go ahead for something he has floated and perhaps more advisers got involved, he did it on the down low to make it into a public statement could actually have negative ramifications, whether it's sending that signal, making others feel as though they are hard done by because they've gone through other means. Do you think it would be preferable to have this amnesty and not make it into a big PR exercise, or do you think the Prime Minister and the government should be saying, we are a country which is going to do this?
I think it would have made sense to do it with the immigration reforms that we've just seen last week, because they are tougher, they end free movement, and I think it could have been seen as a balance. I think if you're surprised that Boris Johnson might consider this, you haven't been following his political career, and you don't really know who you voted for, because he's been very sympathetic to amnesty for a long time. I don't think that this has to be, you know...
No, it wasn't heavily in the Tory manifesto, was it?
No, it wasn't.
But we know he knows it's right.
Yes.
He's just
yes.
too scared.
I just mean perhaps not every
voter... Right. Every time he talks about it, it seems to... 5 years seems to be added to the period that he
recognised. You're actually incorrect there. The last time scale he gave was 12 years. Sometimes he talks about 10. But his point is that it is an absurdity to be theoretically committed to the expulsion of 1.2 million people. It's an absurdity. It would take 150 years on current trends to get rid of them. So I think Boris is actually... Everybody says he's inconsistent here. I think he's been admirably consistent. And I think we should be bracing ourselves for a happy surprise on this front. Happy for me anyway, maybe not for him.
So sorry, Kate, as you were saying.
No, well, I hope it's a happy surprise. I mean, I really hope it's a happy surprise. It would be the right thing to do. And clearly he's nervous, but he's won this mandate now. And I don't think it's an in-your-face to the new red wall, or red pile in the dust, really, voters, who I think would understand that these are their neighbors and their friends and the kids that their kids go to school with. We are not talking about bringing in a million new people. We are talking about people who are already here, who you interact with, who you know, who you love. And I think that there will be real sympathy for that. Those red wall voters are people who work their way up and have started to consider the Conservative Party, not just because of Brexit, but partially because of, you know, the opportunities that Brexit brings, but because of the Conservatives' messaging on ambition. This is something that you can relate to. And I think, you know, it wouldn't just be the right thing to do, it'd be the practical thing to do. If you think about the amount of resources we're spending, you know, we've heard lots about how expensive it's going to be. Think about the resources that we're spending, not just on the go-home vans, but on the home raids at 5 a.m. to see if partners are sleeping in the same bed. Mm-hmm. There was a couple reported on by The Guardian a few years back that were told they couldn't be in a real relationship because they were wearing pajamas in bed. What about the raids on weddings? The raids on weddings. Couples have been stopped from getting married mid-ceremony because the Home Office tells them that they're not really in love. Why don't we take those resources and we put them towards actually stopping criminals foreign criminals who come to this country, people who have put knives and drugs in kids' hands, and why don't we put them towards enforcing the new immigration plans, rather than targeting, you know, the mass number of people here who are peaceful, living their lives, and want to contribute to society?
So Alp might want to come in.
Lots to say. I mean, even David is
Havering.
Hey. Look, I've been an immigration officer. I was an immigration officer for 10 years, working in London.
And you regularised people.
And I regularised people working at the Home Office. If the rules, if the law says, yes, you're entitled to stay here, you will be given permission to stay here. That's always been the case. And perhaps the reason why Boris is remaining shtum now is having got into number 10 and actually heard all the facts about what's going on, he realises that those who have a right to be here or can qualify for a right to be here will be permitted to stay. It's not a problem. I think it's a mistake, and there's been allusions to Windrush and hostile environment. Let's get one thing clear. The Windrush debacle was something totally different. You were talking about people who had every right to be here. They had the right to be here as a result of the 1971 Immigration Act. They were given... I'm a Windrusher. I arrived here from a part of the empire, from another colony in Cyprus, at a time before Cyprus was independent. I came here perfectly legally. That's what happened to a lot of people, and then their children acquired the right to be here as a result of their parents arriving here perfectly legally. Nothing to do with the fact that someone who actually comes in a clandestine fashion, the moment they cross the border, they are here legally. They have broken the law. Now, you can say, well, yes, but they're looking for a better life. Yes, as my parents were looking for a better life. But
sure,
they have broken the law. You can't escape that. You try explaining to the Inland Revenue that you didn't pay your taxes 10 years ago or 7 years ago, whatever it is, and say, but I've been a good person since and I've worked hard and I've paid my taxes. See what they would say, Fraser.
By the way, they offer amnesties the whole time. The Inland Revenue cut deals with people that they can't be bothered to prosecute because it costs too much money. It's a very good example of something where it actually is in the national interest to come to a common sense compromise.
But you are not told, yes, OK, they may not take any action because they're under pressure, their resources are limited and blah, blah, blah. But the fact is that the Inland Revenue will never say, yes, OK, we'll let you get away with it. It just doesn't happen.
Sure. Just on that, I want to add, do you accept that in some circumstances you are going to have immigrants coming here who cannot arrive legally because of their circumstances, but in a way they do have a moral case for being here? Because clearly if you come from certain countries, it's going to be a much simpler process, but it's not necessarily a luxury.
When you're dealing with human beings, if you've got any heart at all, it doesn't matter where they're coming from, what the circumstances are, if that individual... Mm-hmm. touches you in some way emotionally, frankly, you will do all sorts of things that you shouldn't do. That's neither here nor there. This country, I happen to believe, is, as we all do, I'm sure, agree, it's a wonderful country and it's a very attractive country. Having worked overseas, represented this country, I have seen how others regard us in this, with awe almost, how wonderful we are. All this serves to attract and make this country attractive. There's no denying that. But what we're talking about is the legality, the process. We have a system, we have a law that says you will come in this fashion. If you don't, you are breaking that law. And what we are saying now is brushing that aside, saying it doesn't really matter. Apart from the fact that a lot of people, rightly or wrongly, do feel very strongly about the fact that we should not be giving an amnesty, and that also we cannot ignore.
David, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, Asylum is such a... I mean, I think we are very hypocritical about Asylum. We always go on about how open we are to asylum seekers and what a great tradition we have of accepting people and so on. But actually, we make it almost impossible, you know, I mean, unless you're a kind of, you know, deputy minister in an African government who's sort of facing assassination by your president, and then you can get on a plane and fly to Heathrow and claim asylum. Or but for most people, it's almost impossible to come in through. There is no kind of asylum front door. So we spend, you know, millions and millions of pounds stopping people coming into the country or forcing them to, you know, to come into the country on in the backs of cars or under lorries. And then half of them we grant asylum to. And that kind of seems uncommonsensical. I don't quite know what the answer to that is. I mean, whether there could be a more of a sort of front door for, you know, for those asylum seekers, you know, who have a cut and dried case, you know, the gay son of a Taliban leader or whatever. But I do think, I mean, you know, Kate, the way that Kate talks, I mean, Kate's been reading The Guardian too much. I mean, the idea that we have this kind of draconian system, I mean, it's the system. Do you know how many people we actually deported last year, involuntarily deported? It was basically 3,000. I mean, it was 8,000, but 5,000 of them came directly from prison.
And they're probably the 3,000 most entrepreneurial people. That's a problem with the system.
They go after the easy targets. I mean, that's a whole other issue, Fraser. I mean, what you're talking about is brain drain, the massive brain drain problem. You are taking the brightest, most ambitious, often most educated people from some of the poorest countries in the world. We've got a lot of educated people already in this country. You are taking the brightest and the best from these poor countries and allowing them to stay here when they're desperately needed in Vietnam and places
Absolutely.
Like that. Desperately needed. I mean, and you end up having all the kind of bright, ambitious people living in one big city in London or New York or San Francisco, and the rest of the world can go and fuck itself. I mean, it's kind of what you're saying. Like, I mean, let's have a more kind of even...
Do you accept that with big massive nets in Vietnam catching people and smuggling them and taking them back
That's kind of the way you talk about it.
Since when, one at a time?
The same thing happens with the Scots.
Exactly the same people from Scotland come here.
And stay when they could well be up in Scotland where they're needed.
Oh, now we're getting to it. Didn't take long to get to that, though, did it?
Can I just, you know, immigration, you know, people get in a fuss about immigration. Do you know how few people are in immigration detention? I think there are probably more academics studying immigration detention than are actually in immigration detention at the moment. There are less than 1,000 people in immigration detention. We do not deport people. Voluntary deportation has fallen off a cliff. All of the deportations have fallen off a cliff, partly because of the Windrush effect. The Home Office is absolutely terrified to do anything.
Yep.
Kate, do you accept that there is a moral... Well, let's get to the question first. Do you accept that there is potentially a moral argument that lots of the people we're talking about would actually... There's actually a case for them to be in the countries they're originally from, contributing to the economy, contributing to the country there, rather than us being greedy Londoners?
I think it is... I'm sure not meant to be, but deeply authoritarian to think that Vietnam or any other country owns their people to the extent that nobody else can have them. I mean, that was the policy of East Germany, right? That's the policy of countries that I don't think we should be trying to really take anything meaningful away from. Now, that doesn't mean that people should be able to go wherever they want and do whatever they want without following the rules. I agree with that. Nobody's disagreeing that those who are legal immigrants in the UK have one way or another broken the rules. But the idea that we should structure our society, especially, and maybe you don't, but especially if you, as I do, believe in the free movement of goods and services and think that trade and movement is good for this world, then of course there's a level at which people moving around is good too. This government has taken steps, leaving freedom of movement behind, to decide what it's going to do with its own levels of immigration. But we are talking about people here now, and they are not owned by their home countries if they don't want to be there. And they want to be British, and they've done everything that they can do to be British.
But Kate,
we should not say that they have to live forevermore, indefinitely, in this state of exploitation and abuse.
No. Well, we agree. We agree that we should do something to reduce the limbo population. But
great debate over
in,
it. Well,
well, I mean, this is. I mean, it is a kind of non-debate because we all kind of agree.
Well, with the
possible exception of Alp.
Well, we haven't got to the audience questions yet.
Right.
We're going to go to audience questions just before we do one question to you, Fraser, which is. Okay, so the a Pew study has said about 250,000 illegal immigrants have been here for 10 years or longer. So what are you proposing under the motion tonight? What are you proposing happens to the other million? Are they waiting to get to 10 years or are we trying to deport? What's going on there?
But there ought to be a path to citizenship. The ones that get to the 10-year mark, they will be able to apply. Now, you're right, the 10-year thing is arbitrary. It could be drawn at another place. But as long as they're basically... And I'm not saying as well that I would take all 250,000 of them. You would have to have led a... to demonstrate that you'd be an asset to the country. In other words, you wouldn't have broken any laws. And it would strike most people as being a common-sense solution simply to let these people stay. Now, 250,000 people is not a lot to ask, really. And it's still... but and I would... if anything, I would like to do that just to highlight the fact that there would be almost a million other people who we are allowing to live in this state of exploitation, and we should be having a lot more conversations about what we can do for those people because they too are our countrymen.
Right, who has a question? Okay, great, we're going to take a couple at a time. Have we got two sets of microphones? Great. Can we have the man in the blue jumper first? You're welcome to give us your name, or you can just give us a question, it's up to you.
Yes, well, my name's...
Give us your immigration status.
I was born in the UK. My parents are from Poland. And you're absolutely right, David Goodhart, to speak about immigration only being one side of the equation, because, of course, the other side is emigration. And whereas individuals might benefit individually, the economies and the countries have seen, particularly in Eastern Europe, but all around the world, have not benefited at all from large volumes of people migrating. And that's something that we have to bear in mind. I think it's rather disingenuous to pull on the heartstrings and talk about moral arguments, because actually immigration, particularly the rate of immigration to the UK and England particularly, which is now more densely populated than any other country in Europe, than India or Japan, it has huge consequences on quality of life, on integration issues, on crime levels were mentioned, but that's just a tiny fragment of it. I've just been from literally about an hour ago to a protest in West London against high-rise towers because they're going up all around suburban London. We've got enormous problems with homes of multiple occupation. If you want to talk about migration and quality of life of migrants, migrants are being exploited because of the rate of immigration here. We've got landlords putting migrants, 10 into a house, all around suburban London. They live in appalling conditions. This is a result of effectively a very liberal migration policy, which is encouraging, and I want to be clear, it is encouraging more people to come here. And we need to be firm in order to stop this from getting worse. And this is something that the new voting bloc of the Tory party, which has now shifted very much the working class and the so-called the red wall or the blue wall, perhaps we'll better describe it, is those people voted for Brexit. Those people want significant reductions in numbers. I do think we should actually be deporting a few people.
Great, thank you very much. Now we're going to take the man in the green jacket with the brown collar.
Thank you very much. The name's Han Ratty. I'm the retired immigration judge, and therefore I'm probably regarded as rather hostile here. But in fact, we must be compassionate to these people who have found themselves in the most dreadful, awful mess. But I'm not sure that an amnesty is the way forward. The question was made that, oh, it won't increase the numbers because we're already here. Well, of course, some of them, at least, when granted status, may want to bring their relatives in. No, nothing necessarily wrong in that, but that is a fact. Secondly, I was in Hong Kong as a legal advisor on the handover when the Hong Kong government offered an amnesty to Vietnamese to come in. Everybody felt very virtuous about this, but forgot to think what happened in the villages when the traffickers went around and said, I got your neighbour. Labour in. I'll get you in. He'll get an amnesty too. And oh, by the way, the fees increased to 5,000 US. And 3 months later, there was an enormous second wave. So there were no more amnesties. But this is a very difficult problem. There's no easy answer. There's no black and white on this. The answer must be, I suppose, to suggest is that the Home Office must show a more enlightened view in individual cases to try to help regularise people's stay more easily than they do. And all these points and many more are included in my book. The making the making of an immigration judge, a second edition of which, published by Quartet, is coming out in April.
Great, thank
in
you.
April, do get it and have a good laugh. And
very,
thank
very
you.
Good it
Thanks
is too.
We'll see if that plug makes it into the podcast. Now, before we go to more questions, Kate, how would you respond to that first question there about actually whether this is fair on immigrants coming here and other countries, and actually a firm approach is the way forward?
Well, you mentioned India. I mean...
No, we didn't.
The gentleman did, yes.
Well,
he mentioned, and he included India. And I'm thinking of women in India who might not agree that they should be forced to stay there. I'm thinking of lots of countries where their attitude towards human rights, towards women, towards gay people, towards everybody is not the same as it is in other countries. And I can understand and sympathize, as I'm sure this gentleman who's written a fantastic book, experienced many, many times in court, that these individual cases come to us and we can't look at people as this group mass who have left India or this group mass who are doing X or Y. We have to look at their individual cases. And again, if you go back to those demographics, people who actually live illegally here, it's 58% of people who are under the age of 35. These are not people who are desperate for the UK's benefits. If you want benefits, don't come illegally. These are people who are doing anything they can to make a better life for themselves. The reason they're working for £2, the reason that, which is completely illegal and those employers should be in massive trouble, the reason that they're living in a house with 10 other people is because these individuals have decided that that quality of life is better than what they could get elsewhere. You're not going to be able to deter those people, as Fraser was saying before. You're not going to be able to stop them by simply saying you have to continue to live off the books. They've come here for a reason, and we have to be honest about that reality.
Do you want to come back on that point? And then we're going to do the second question.
James Hanratty, he knows his onions, and I particularly agree with the point over Hong Kong, because I was in the Foreign Office at the time and involved in the whole negotiations process. And the last thing we want to do is send out the sort of signals to individuals that it will be okay to get here, because once you do, eventually you will be given permission to stay forever. And that is precisely how the traffickers market it. And don't underestimate the extent to which they watch for every single little opportunity that comes up to exploit it to the hilt. And there's a lot of people who frankly jeopardise their lives, risk their lives, and we've seen examples of that time and time again. I suspect that there are a lot that we don't see materialising as well, who have lost their lives or... really, something very sad has happened to them. That is not something that we should be encouraging. An amnesty would do exactly that.
David, when it comes to the panel tonight, you have spoken in favour to a degree of a 10-year amnesty, but I think it's safe to say it feels slightly less enthusiastic in some ways than those on the other end of the panel. So I wondered what you made of the comment from the judge then about this idea that actually an amnesty might not be the way to solve some of these problems.
Well, yeah, I mean, I said it's, you know, it should be regularisation. Let's not use the word amnesty. I think the word amnesty is a massive turn-off. I mean, you know, the country's just hugely rejected Kate's kind of free market extremism. And if you see an amnesty, in any headline, you know, it's going to frighten people. I mean, kind of, you know... gradual kind of regularisation of specific groups is a completely different story, and I think that is sensible. When kind of flamboyant, you know, Boris-like gestures of amnesty, I think is completely out with the current political atmosphere. And I do think, you know, that all of this I mean, 20 million people come to this country every year who have no right to stay and work here. 3 million of them come under visas. I mean, we have a very open system, and I think when I want to keep that open flow across the borders. But I think what people have voted for is a slowdown in the demographic change to this country. I mean, this is a democracy. We do own this country. I mean, we own a democracy. I mean, the Vietnamese may not own their country because it's a communist country. We own our country, and we can decide these things. And we have decided, I think, that the experiment in mass immigration we've had in the last 20, 25 years has gone too far. We want to remain an open country. We want to have high flows over the borders, but we do not want to have that pace of demographic change. And I think that is, the government is broadly speaking on the right track. If we went for a massive flamboyant amnesty, that would be completely out with that.
David, they didn't reject free marketeerism. They rejected rabid socialism. And I think, I think, again, if you look at Boris Johnson's record, they didn't know who they were voting for if they weren't willing to consider it. Sorry.
They were voting for Tory social democracy, I think is what they were.
Perhaps we can deep dive in the next round of questions, but I think Fraser hasn't spoken and might want to say something on this round.
We're talking a bit at cross purposes, right? I mean, Dave, you're saying, Dave, we're going to slow the flow of people into this country. You, sir, are talking about we've got to watch out the level of migration. We're building towers on West London. We can't fit them all in. But this is a separate argument. Kate and I are talking about regularising the status of people who are already here. This is now what's happening anyway is we're about to leave the EU and come up with far tighter immigration. The restrictions that you want, sir, in immigration are already going to happen. This is the ideal moment to say, okay, we're going to do this. We are going to decrease the flow, but at the same time, we are going to address this problem we've ignored for too long and regularise people who've been living amongst us for 10 years. This will not increase any pressure. So, nor are we talking about this flamboyant gesture of an immediate amnesty. David, you're rejecting as something that nobody is really advocating here.
Incremental regularisation is what we need.
Would you say it's time to offer regularisation?
And that's too long a phrase to get in a headline. So
it's a mealy-mouthed way of saying amnesty.
We're offering a common-sense compromise. You guys are rejecting a radical amnesty that nobody's actually
proposing. Yeah, exactly. That's what I said in my opening comments. I mean, so that in a way, there's no argument here. And you're not arguing for an amnesty.
We have 15 minutes left.
Sorry, one important point. Kate said it was a rejection of socialism. It just happens to have been socialism that was all for open borders. And that's what they
Ronald
rejected
Reagan was not a
as
socialist.
Part of the rest of the socialist nonsense that was being propounded.
And we have 15 minutes left. I want to take some more questions. Anyone have a question? The man in the white shirt, the further back. And then we've got a man in a jumper over here.
Thanks very much. I'm originally from Boston in Lincolnshire, which was... Okay, brilliant. So it was probably one of the most affected by some of the immigration that's happened over the last year, with 16,000 people... coming into a borough the size of 60,000 in the space of 5 years. I think the thing that we've got to remember, though, is that that was all legal immigration. So all of this was controlled, was completely uncontrolled. And that's why I'm quite supportive at the minute of the actual enforcement that some of the... that Priti Patel's taking through within the Home Office at the minute, particularly with regards to people who've committed crimes and then are getting deported. You'd probably be quite surprised that I'm actually fairly supportive of this amnesty, but what I really wholly disagree with is bringing in at the same time as a really big change in the immigration system. I have absolutely no confidence any government will be able to do two incredibly complicated things at one time.
Okay, thank you. And then this gentleman.
Hi, I'm a vicar that reads The Spectator, so that's a really quite small demographic.
You'd be surprised, sir. You should see some of our subscription addresses.
I was interested in the argument that Kate made at the beginning, the moral argument about people being abused and exploited because they're here illegally and because they can't access benefits or the law for when they're underpaid or housing or all of these other things. And I was just interested, if it's immoral that they are living like that, then it's immoral that they're living like that. Making it, they have to live like that for 10 years or 9 years or 8 years is still immoral. And when you put a 10-year limit on, you're going to create borderline cases. You're going to have cases where a man has come out 6 months before his wife came out and one gets deported and the other doesn't. If there is a moral case to be made, then it's a blanket moral case. It can't be time limited.
Two really interesting questions. I'm just going to take one more because I feel like we're not going to potentially have time for another round. So this lady at the front.
Thank you. I'm really pleased that you said... I was one of the two people who put my hands up for 2 years or less, and it was because exactly... Were you the other one?
Yes.
Ah, right. Sorry, in which case we've done it. My point is, just a couple of things. One, they're already here, so this whole business about... You know, we've covered that. On the moral case... I think it does go... I think living in a society where we know that there are people who are 10 to a room, paid £2 an hour or whatever, is just not acceptable. That's just not British. What we can do, though, surely, is develop a system where anybody who is actually prepared to want to come to this country to work, to pay taxes, I would actually have completely open borders, regardless... Forget Europe, and by the way, I've voted for Brexit, so this isn't, you know...
You're weird.
Sorry? No, but the point was, I voted for Brexit for other reasons. It wasn't anything to do with immigration. I get rather fed up with people thinking it's about immigration. My thing is that if people are actually coming and they're going to be paid properly and then they're going to pay the taxes and all the rest of it, I would have completely open borders. My point is, if you're not coming to work, then you get deported. End of.
Okay, so let's get some answers from our panel, perhaps a few brief closing remarks. At the moment, I feel as though the motion itself, it's kind of right in the sense, 3 people are in favour, 1 person doesn't. But if we respond to some of those quite interesting questions there, firstly, Fraser, what do you say to the moral argument there from the, that actually you're arguing for this 10-year amnesty, but in a way, if you follow your argument, it's immoral to really say 2 years and so forth?
Well, I would ask the vicar to hear my confession and say that...
He's an Anglican.
Well,
it is that... Do we?
Let's try and stay on message for now.
You can do a mass confession afterwards. You're right. So logically, you're right. If I say 10 years, what about 9? If I say 9 years, what about 8? And where do you draw the line? I would, and I also sympathise with your point, Mam, about border control. Instinctively, I am a liberal. Not so long ago, I wanted to abolish border control as well. I changed my mind on that because I worked out, of course, for 2 reasons. First of all, it's all very well for somebody in my position to be liberal in immigration. It's not so easy if you're on the other end of a district line. And, you know, I checked my privilege a bit on that. Secondly, I'm a believer in globalisation. I believe it needs to come with democratic consent. You need to bring people with you. I voted for Brexit in part because I worked out that the globalisation that I was advocating 10 years ago was having a lot of opposition to it. And you basically need to move to a position where more people can bring with you. So that's why I'm now against, in a way that I didn't think I would do a few years ago, now backing the government to Priti Patel's crackdown, simply because I want a globalisation that has got more people on board with it. Now, so I would say to you, yes, you're right. The case I argue is open to that problem. I would simply suggest it's an improvement to what we've got right now.
David, do you want to...
Yeah, I mean,
there is reflections to bring in there.
Yeah, I mean, there clearly is. You know, there is a problem with modern slavery. I mean, these traffickers.
I'm glad we've got to this.
Well, I mean, a lot of. I've been out with an immigration enforcement group, and you know, they're apart from the fact that it was the most ethnically mixed work group I've ever experienced in Britain. These were people who are very sensitive, very aware that. You know, the offenders are also victims. So, that you know, that this is, again, this is not some sort of heavy-handed, draconian Home Office. But I think we do need to just hold on for a moment and recognise some of the people that are being exploited, I mean, not the people who are necessarily in some version of sort of chattel slavery, but a lot of the people are exploiting themselves. I mean, there's a degree of self they are choosing to be in this condition. They can leave at any moment. They are not slaves, the vast majority, and they are free to go. There's an element of self-exploitation here that I think we're rather missing. And I think, you know, I mean, we should be encouraging people who didn't come in legally to leave. Like I said earlier, I think that we should be far more generous in the grants that we give people to leave. But, you know, if you have been here, you're clearly settled here, you're never going to be deported, you've been here 10 or 15 years, then there is a case, as we've been saying, for a limited, low-profile regularisation. But I do think, I mean, just a final point, I mean, that one gets this impression about the Home Office, I mean, and the term, the bloody term, hostile environment. I mean, if we want to have this combination of high flows over the border, but public confidence in a system that is controlling immigration, if anything, leading it down to a kind of lower equilibrium level of immigration, which is what I think most people want, then we have to have an internal border, which is what the hostile environment is. We have to have status checking of people. Like I said, 20 million people come here without the right to stay and work. Unless we have internal checks through employers, through landlords, through banks and so on, then we are going to have a growing illegal population. We have to have a so-called hostile environment that works.
David, just before we move on, I just wondered, because when this lady in the audience said that she'd voted for Brexit, but she also was in favour of a very relaxed immigration system to a degree, a lot of the conversation around immigration at the moment is we have had a Brexit vote, that means we have to get tougher on it. I noticed that your comments also got cheers in the audience. So do you accept that perhaps immigration isn't, you know, the main driver of Brexit?
Or I think it's been one of the main ones. Yeah. I mean, I very rudely said it was slightly weird of you to do that.
No,
and I apologise for that. however, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, democratic accountability, you know, is another very good reason. I mean, you know, the European Union is going to become less and less democratic as it becomes more and more, as the countries become more and more integrated. So I think one of the... But democratic accountability, national identity, you know, holding on to a country is are all kind of melded together in a way. So I think you may not have voted, you may have this, if not weird, unusual combination of views, but I think the vast majority of people, even people who voted for Brexit on democratic, national democratic accountability grounds, were doing it partly in order to make sure that we continue to exist as a country, which requires some degree of control over who comes here.
Now, coming to you and your thoughts and closing remarks, I wondered, you were saying earlier that ultimately these moral arguments get a bit neither here nor there sometimes, but in terms of the practicality. So I wondered if this man's question had changed any of your perspective.
Well, I'm always influenced by the sort of thoughts of Vickers. I mean, frankly, in any civilised discussions, in any civilised debate, there's going to be lots of areas where we all agree, even if there are significant bits where we disagree. I know a number of people who voted Brexit and, frankly, are for open borders. Claire Fox is one.
No, she's not really in favour of it.
Well, she was.
She was a Brexit Party MEP.
She was.
Couldn't get more Brexit.
She became an MEP. But that's neither here nor there, frankly. We have an immigration system. Do we want a properly regulated system for immigration? It's not a case of being for or against or whatever for immigration. I think immigration is a great thing. It will continue. It's part of any decent, dynamic society. It always has been and always will be. But what people perhaps indirectly reacted against, particularly with the referendum, was the level of immigration, the scale of immigration. Over the last 10 years, 250,000 net people coming here, adding to our population something like 1 million every 3 years. That is massive. Of course that's going to bring pressures in all sorts of areas, our services, our congestion on the roads even. Dare I say that, given that Nigel Farage got lambasted for saying something similar, and I'm not suggesting I'm for or against Nigel Farage, but we are talking about a properly regulated, decent immigration system that works. With regards to an amnesty, just to go back to the original point, why we're here, may I quote something that a former chairman of the Home Affairs Committee said in respect of calls for an amnesty for failed asylum seekers, the sort of people that added to the long list of people who were waiting to be dealt with, David. Amnesties set up a vicious circle which should be broken by discouragement of unfounded claims, dealing with them quickly, fast and efficient processing of those claims when made, and rapid removals when claims have failed. That was a Labour Home Affairs Committee chairman.
Who?
John Denham.
All right.
Now, I
was going to say it wouldn't be Yvette Cooper. No.
it wasn't. No. She'll be saying it in years to come, though. The fact is that whatever Fraser says and however eloquently he says it, an amnesty, an open, declared, all whistles blowing, flags flaving amnesty would be a disaster, frankly, and not in anyone's interest, including migrants who are already here, frankly.
Kate, you get to have the last word on the panel, and then we're going to check to see if any audience members have changed their mind on the issue over the past hour and 15 minutes. In your closing remarks, I wondered, there was an interesting point for the man originally from Lincolnshire, which is this idea that you were saying earlier it would be a good idea to have this amnesty at the same time as announcing this new system, but they were suggesting that perhaps reality of government capability or perhaps incapability suggests it wouldn't be the best idea.
Well, I've already factored in that the government will mess everything up, so I thought it was best comment of the night. I suppose, their capacity is always up for discussion and an interesting question, but I think in terms of policy, whether you actually bring it in right away or whether you bring it in over 5 years could be announced at the same time to show that counterbalance. To the gentleman here, this is the moral conundrum. I think you're right, absolutely, in principle. But I think sometimes our morals have to find political reality and mesh the two. Perhaps this is the best we can all do right now in challenging circumstances. But I've been told tonight that I'm a free market extremist and reading The Guardian too much. So I suspect that means I'm actually in the sensible middle. And I think the sensible middle is that, of course, we should have rules around the immigration system. Of course, there should be regulations. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about the future. We're not talking about who's coming in. We're talking about people who've served in the army, who've laid down roots, who've contributed to society, who you have come across in every aspect of your life. And, sorry?
How can you serve in the army and be an illegal immigrant?
There's a guy called Trevor Rennie who served in the army.
The Spectator, he was
you wrote about him. Yeah.
One guy. He's in the army and he's being chased now after having served in uniform. He's being kicked out for being an illegal immigrant.
And to be very clear, it's not one. I mean, the hostile environment is very real. I have experienced
it.
My friends.
It's called the internal border.
My friends have experienced it. The reality of it is that it may not affect a lot of people in this room, but it affects all migrants, and it certainly affects the most vulnerable in society. Those stories, whether they're in The Guardian or anywhere else, are real, and we should take them seriously. And I think one of the ways we can take them seriously is to look at all those people who have served in our communities, who have served around us, you know, whether they be your friend or someone you pass on the street who are contributing, and say that there is a way out, there is a way to be considered to be like me, like you,
so,
like the rest
of
us.
Kate, should we not have checks? Should there not be employer checks? Should there not be landlord checks?
No, not at all, no? David. The hostile environment isn't simply about your employer having to figure out whether or not you have legal status. It's about home raids. It's about refugees being called into the Home Office and being interviewed by other countries' representatives. This is what we need to crack down on, and a pathway is amnesty.
Now, I suspect there may be some post-event conversations going on. And you can also come and try and quickly corner whichever member of the panel you agreed or perhaps disagreed with the most. But for now, returning to the motion, which for those who have got sidetracked, was the idea that it is time to offer amnesty to Britain's illegal immigrants working on those who had been here for 10 years. Has anyone who didn't... So we had about two-thirds of the room earlier put their hand up in favour. Has anyone joined that group who wasn't previously? Okay. We've got about four. Okay, four. So we've got four new joiners. I can almost do four and a half. And ultimately, on the other end of the spectrum, has anyone who was in favour of a 10-year amnesty now against it? Okay, three, four. Okay, so I think we end it even, but we have...
Yeah, good question. Anybody undecided, change your mind one way or the other?
And to Afi, have you now decided?
Okay.
Okay, so you're now...
You didn't qualify it by saying
apology, that is bad sharing for me. But we have one
I think
undecided.
This guy here tilts it to their side, actually.
And I just wonder, of the people, does anyone who has switched side want to tell everyone why they've done it, or is that too much attention right now? maybe too much. Come, you can tell us after, perhaps. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I believe the bar is going to be open for a while for people who want to get refreshment after this. Can we say thank you to our esteemed panel for their contribution?